Welcome back to Hey Kids Comics, issue 78, end of a story arc. You missed the warm-up. I'm going to release it. I've got it recorded. So our warm-up was really tight tonight. I got to say, it's not Aunt Vagina tight, but it's tight. That was last night, sorry.
You'll have to listen to the USG to figure out what that means.
You'll know exactly what we're talking about. So that was my throw-over. That was my sizzler reel for the USG.
That's our plug for the United States of Geekdom at UnitedStatesofGeekdom.com.
Those dulcet tones you're used to, that is the Reverend Emeritus, tenured professor of comiXology, the Jedi Cole Houston over there.
That means that I can actually – I'm a bartender in the comics.
You're a bartender.
It's comiXology.
You're more qualified than Queen Latifah to marry comic book characters. And over on the other side of me tonight is alum and ARC regular. That's what I'm going to call him. He's just a regular.
He's not only alum, he's Abner as well.
Right. He's not even a regular. He's our go-to. The unmountable Bobby Blakey. Are you over there, Bobby?
Yes, be warned, children. Parental advisory is required.
Bobby
is the electric knife of this show.
He really is.
We keep him in a drawer for when we need him, and he's incredibly handy, especially around the holidays.
That's right.
And around my house.
Right. And he probably shouldn't be used while drinking. But
that's most mean.
But tonight we are closing out a story arc, Rethinking the Legends. This issue is called Brave New Worlds. It is a story arc that we've gone through now about the multiverse, alternate timelines. It's been fun. It's been really fun, and we're going to bring it to a close tonight.
This has been a fascinating arc because I originally envisioned this for one episode, one show.
This is one of the ones where Cole said... I've got an idea for an episode. I'm like, bullshit. This is going to be a story arc, buddy.
This is an arc. And just to prove it, I'm bringing Bobby Blakey along for the ride.
That's right. Bobby deserves all of our praise and adoration at all times. So I couldn't think of a better way to show him how much we appreciate him than making him do a story arc with us.
That's right. Nonsense.
That's right. So Cole, what are we doing? What's this about? What's happening?
This one is about essentially all of the times that we get incredible feedback here.
Right.
I'm hoping that cleared that up.
Sounds better. Go for it.
Okay.
Sorry, technical difficulties.
Yeah, I think we're crossing over with another dimension.
We were. That was our multiverse selves coming back to haunt us.
But this is the thing about when worlds collide, and all of the other worlds of publishers, and really kind of just a potpourri, if you will, of alternate dimensions, alternate universes. One of the things we really didn't touch on was intercompany crossovers and buyouts and things like that.
We got time. We got a whole show tonight.
Yeah, so we're going to really get in on that. We're going to get in on a lot of things where... what started out as an alternate reality kind of becomes a reality of its own, and pretty much anything we may have missed along the lines.
That's right.
Because this was going to be one issue, and much to my surprise and delight, it has become a fully fleshed out arc.
So what I want to start with tonight, and we're going to round out and come around to all of those topics as well, but... we're going to hit them fast and furious, as we do when we know we forgot things. First of all, I have to give a disclaimer. We were asked to give a disclaimer. This is for Josh. This is for regular listener Josh Alpert.
That's why I gave it when I introduced myself.
He's out there somewhere listening. Josh, I'm doing this for you and all of our listeners.
I felt this flash of Wolverine in the old X-Men Saturday morning cartoon. This is for you, Morph.
That's right. the views represented by Bobby Blakey do not necessarily represent the views of Hey Kids Comics or the Jedi Cole universe as a whole or the express written consent of Major League Football. But that being said, there is no disclaimer strong enough to bind the will of Bobby Blakey. So be warned.
If you want
to
get technical, they don't even express my real views.
That's right. So that being said,
if you forged a disclaimer in the fires of Mount Doom,
right?
It would not be powerful enough to bind anything.
We need some Gandalf level hawks to.
You need Rom the Space Knight.
I always need Rom the Space Knight.
Wow.
Do you, pervert?
Speaking of Rom the Space Knight, I want to talk real quickly about our favorite ones that made it through the cut. And what I mean by that is we've discussed a lot of multiverse, a lot of different worlds, a lot of different character takes. But some of them made it through into major continuity. Some of them cut through and they said, hey, this works. We're going to use it in major continuity. So, Cole, do you have any favorite things that existed outside of what was supposed to happen that they were like, no, we're going to fold that in. That actually happened.
Well, I think perhaps not necessarily a favorite, but I think the one that kind of started it all was what was probably like this show or this particular story arc intended to be a little one shot, The Flash of Two Worlds.
Okay. Yeah.
I really have no doubt in my mind that was meant to be a little, hey, wouldn't it be cool if that original Flash and the contemporary Flash could coexist somehow? We could just say that, the reason you have these two different Flashes is they come from different dimensions, different Earths. And, who'd have thought that decades later that would create the crisis?
Right.
Or, be the fulcrum on which the crisis pivoted. And, that all started with probably what was intended to be a little, somebody was probably bothered, some writer was bothered by the fact that there was another Flash. And, all the other characters benefited greatly from that.
And what's cool about it is that's a well that they have gone to many times now since. They did it with the Green Lantern. And I'm not talking, they did, when they brought Alan Scott in as, what was his name? Starfire or Magic Fire or Firebelly or whatever. Firebelly,
that dude sounds awesome.
Firebelly. Put him in, he can be a villain in the Flutesman and the Cardigan.
Yeah. He basically belches fire.
He shoots it out of his belly button.
Right. So
shakes it and fire shoots it like purts out of it. Like.
I mean, they've done it with Superman. They've done it with Superboy. They've really gone to that well because it works and it works well. And it's a good story to tell. It's an enjoyable story to tell. Bobby, what about you?
You know what? I'm going to go in a more annoying direction.
Shocking.
Because it's not so much that it was like stuff I enjoyed, but it's just so ridiculous. Yeah, you may have to correct me if I'm wrong, and I know that I am often, but when they take like stuff like the Marvel UK characters that were considered to be separate,
right?
And they kind of folded them in and started making them regularly cross over with Death's Head and those people. It was just like, why are you here?
You just showed up. Yeah,
I noticed Plasma never made the crossover.
How does Death's Head get a passport?
Exactly. That's the comics I want to see is them at the airport trying to come to New York, and he's got his big, claw face looking thing, and, right. And he's trying to go through the metal detector, and it keeps beeping. He's like, oh.
See,
that's a good point, because one of the things I was going to bring up is back in the 90s, Marvel Comics bought a little upstart company called Malibu Comics.
Okay.
And Malibu had some fairly ambitious but decidedly meh kind of titles. And I'm sorry if I'm offending Malibu fans out there.
Rick, if you're listening, I'm sure
my apologies. Prime really sucked.
You know, Rick turned his back on Malibu as soon as Image left them.
That's probably true. It's probably true. prototype
the thing about Malibu is
hard case.
They came out of nowhere. They had some kind of, here's our take on Superman. Here's our team book. Here's these characters that you're not really going to care about, except that it's something different if you just had enough of Marvel and DC. And they did fairly well. I mean, they were fairly successful. But their biggest success was in the fact that when they started up, they bought the top of the line, state of the art computer coloring software, you know, machine, whatever, the Uniblab of coloring.
Right, the Mondo paper of coloring.
Exactly. And suddenly Marvel thought, that's pretty cool. So instead of just like buying their own, I guess that what Malibu may have just sprung from a computer coloring company, said, why don't we just make our own comics instead of trying to get other comic companies to use our service. And then Marvel said, hey, that's neat. We'll buy it.
Right.
Because that was during the time that Marvel had more money than God, and they bought everything they could get their hands on, and then went bankrupt. After which time, they continued to buy everything they could get their hands on, because much like the railroads, they only started making real money after they were bankrupt.
It's true.
Well, you know, and you know they did it in reverse as well, because you remember Marvel had the book Dreadstar through Epic.
Oh, and Malibu bought
and started trying to do their thing in 2000.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it worked.
See, Dreadstar, all the Epic titles were creator-owned, and Epic was a Marvel-owned imprint.
Right.
So Starlin was free to take Dreadstar wherever he wanted to.
Jimmy Starlin.
Now, so, I'm only boggled why books like Airman never showed up again.
From First Comics. No, that was Airboy I'm thinking of.
Yeah, Airman was a Malibu book.
Okay.
I think it first came through like Centaur Publications or something in the 30s or 40s. And then for some odd reason, they bring it back. If you look at it, it's ridiculous. Like, it looks like some kind of a Hawkman, like samurai hybrid that shouldn't exist.
There was a book that my dad brought me. Okay. When I'm looking for when it was number one, it was in 89. Okay. So I was 11 or 12 at the time, and he found it at a store, and he brought it to me, and it was a Marvel book called Solar Man. I saw one issue of Solar Man.
It's Solar Man of the Atom.
Right, exactly, which I'm imagining is why I never saw it again. But he brought me Solar Man, which is apparently a spinoff of a character that showed up in the animated TV shows. But I have one issue, and I could never find another issue of that as long as I lived. It doesn't have anything to do with this, but I really liked it. So there. Well,
now, and before we get off the Malibu topic, just because now I'm just curious, is Nightman the only book that ever said to do anything?
Nightman is the only book, and I will stand by the fact that Nightman is worth a damn. It's the only book that was good.
Series, and it did, you know, I guess that was kind of their Batman book of their company.
Yeah, and it had a TV show.
It
had a TV show, but Ultra Force apparently also got a cartoon.
It got an amazing cartoon that if you listen back to, there's an unreleased issue of USG, episode of USG, where I am trashed out of my mind watching that with Rick and just giving commentary.
Now, wait a minute.
On the first couple episodes of that show.
What? You know what? We're going to have to talk after this because you being online trashed harkens back to another situation that we've just occurred recently. And
were you trash talking Malibu's showcase superhero teams cartoons?
Obviously, I would have been since we're doing it now and I was trashed the other day.
Well, Bobby, the opportunity will arise for us to do that. Don't you worry. No, Nightman had an amazing TV show made only more amazing because of his skills at playing the saxophone.
Yes. Well, at that period in history, the saxophone was coming back in a big way.
It was Bill Pullman in Lost Highway that brought that back.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get us off topic.
No, but for me...
No, that's okay.
For me, it's Son of the Bat. That was my...
Also, real quick on the Malibu subject, when we were talking about the cross-company crossovers, Avengers Ultra Force was one that we just completely missed out on.
I wouldn't say I'm missing it, Bob.
I was just going to say, did we really miss it? Because I think I read it.
or I should say, we simply managed not to miss
it. We avoided. Let's call it avoided.
They, you know, if I'm not mistaken, they actually did it twice.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it for a second.
I know, like, The only reason I read the first one is because Angel Medina had done the art, and I was a huge fan. You know, at the time, he was more of a McFarlane wannabe type of thing before he found his own style. And right. I remember picking that book up, but then George Perez did the other one.
Yeah.
Because it was back when they would do all those ones where it was like Avengers Ultra Force, and then this issue is Ultra Force Avengers. So you release one for each company, mm-hmm. but they let their characters be the front runner.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did
did also, I think, later on, attempt to force the Ultraverse into the Marvel Universe.
Well, they did a huge run of crossovers with, like, Nightman and Gambit. Rune was in every book. Rune Silver Surfer, Rune Venom, Rune Conan, which would have been the only one worth reading. Prime Captain America, Prime Incredible Hulk, Nightman versus Wolverine. You know, they had all of these books. They're like, no, you're going to read Malibu, whether you like it or not.
Well, yeah, like Cole was saying, because Marvel bought them, and then they relaunched their line. They, like, canceled everybody after they bought them.
Yeah.
Then they relaunched them, and then they canceled them again, and I think they threw them into, like, another universe.
Well, of course they did.
As, like, one of their Earth...
That's the whole point of this story arc.
That's what I'm saying. I think they thrust them in the opposite direction. Instead of bringing them into the continuity,
they essentially took them out.
Continuity.
They got shunted into another continuity.
Oh, it was, they got stuck into, hold on, I just closed it. It was Earth 93060.
Oh my God.
Good Lord.
They wanted them as far away as they could.
Right? That's an insult is what that is. That is not a move. That is a slap in the face. That's amazing. That is amazing. Like, so they bought them, separated the technology from the books, and then took the books and shoved them so far away that they never see the light of day. They man and the iron masked the Malibu universe.
It was, the whole thing was essentially a Judge Doom move.
It really was. Well played.
I'll let people figure that one out. But that, I mean, all they really wanted was that coloring.
That one was for Hunter.
Indeed.
Do you think that, and I want to say I heard a story about it, but like in a case like being thrust out in 93 billion years away variations of Earth, that do you think it's true that one of the reasons besides people weren't buying them when Marvel bought them, but I always heard too that part of the reason they never brought a lot of them back were because they're owned by creators and they don't want to pay them.
Probably. I mean, that makes total sense, especially
it's possible,
for the time period.
But unlikely, because they basically, when they bought them, they tried to utilize them.
Right, but and, I heard a story one time, and I don't remember if it was Quesada or some other publisher or you know whatever at that time was saying that was one of the issues was of them the reason that they're wanting to bring them back, but they can't because then there's logistics about having to pay the creators that own each individual characters.
Right.
I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't really recall Malibu ever being touted as creator-owned, though. And this was in a period where creator-owned was a big... That was a drumhead.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, they beat it wildly over an Image.
So do I.
See,
but only over an Image.
See, mine is my favorite things like this are the ones where they're like, nope, that was supposed to be there all along. Like I was saying, Son of the Bat, where they released the one shot, let it go for God knows how many years, and they're like, nope, that happened. It was real. That's totally something that happened in real life in the comic books. That was not a one shot. This is something that really happened. So, like, those are my favorites, Son of the Bat, because it's so prevalent now.
Well, it's like the sole focus, you know. They kill the character off, and they give him his own miniseries.
Right.
And he's grown up.
So right, and he's starting to appear in all kinds of stuff, and he's,
yeah, but
he's Batman, and he's...
I actually know, like, there's a big, you know, campaign for that kind of thing now with going reverse, where all the live-action adaptations are now becoming continuity in the comics.
Right.
Where they always kept it separately, but you know, Smallville was one of the not the first. Batman animated series with the Harley Quinn was probably one of the bigger ones. But yeah. Smallville did it with Chloe. They wrote her into all the Superman books.
Right, right.
Somebody was asking me about that the other day, and I wasn't sure if that ever happened.
Well, now you've got Coulson, which I'm actually really happy about because I really like that character. I like the way I like him anyway.
That character is in everything now.
Right.
He is the Anthony Daniels of Marvel.
He is the most marketable Marvel character out there right now.
What I'm saying is he plays that character in every incarnation there is. He voices him on Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He plays him on the TV show, plays him in the movies. I wouldn't be surprised if we find out he's actually drawing him every time he shows up.
Right.
Well, also the thing about it is that that's not all that unusual. In that a lot of, I think we've talked about this before on the show, a lot of the old, the stuff that people know Superman for.
Oh, yeah.
Came from radio.
Right.
Prior to the radio show, Superman couldn't fly.
Right. But what I'm talking about, too, is the fact that for years you would have, say, like the Tim Burton Batman movie come out. And then you have the comic adaptation. And while it's the same, it's slightly different.
Yeah.
But the things that didn't happen in that had nothing to do with the book.
Right.
You know, and now they're taking, you know, even the looks of the characters, you know, you take like the show Arrow and they draw him to look like that guy on the show now.
Right.
You know, and even his some of his origins, even though, you know, his origin isn't too far off of the normal Green Arrow origin. They seem to be really latching onto that to try to keep everything connected, you know. But it makes sense.
It's smart to do that.
It is. It's intelligent. It always used to piss me off when I'd see a TV show or a movie or whatever. Then you watch them, you know, you read the comic, and then it's completely different. And you're having to try to memorize, well, okay, this is real continuity. This is just movies. You know, and now they're all continuity. But now it harkens back to the issue we were discussing on the warm-up, whereas, you know, where's that line of change?
Right.
You know, what's acceptable, what's real. You know, like when Man of Steel came out and everybody was throwing a temper tantrum about the way his suit was going to look. Well, yeah. By that, that's what his suit looked like in the comic from New 52.
Right. They took it straight up, like, yeah.
They had no leg to bitch about because that was the way Superman looks. They didn't do him wrong. They did it the way DC makes him.
Well, that's what the thing about this whole Batman from the new Superman Batman movie that's going to be coming out. Well, what's his suit going to look like? It's going to look like the suit from the New 52. That's what the suit's going to look exactly. like, because they'd be stupid as hell to do it any other way. Like, Superman's going to look like Superman. Batman's going to look like Batman. Everybody's going to look like everybody in the way that they're supposed to look. Everybody calm down.
What? Batman always looks like Batman in every incarnation, whether he has nipples or not. He still looks like Batman.
Right.
They've never messed up Batman's suit. You may not like that one, but it still always looks like Batman.
Like, he's not going to come out with a mask and it's not a Dracula costume on.
Right. It's not Zorro the Gay Blade where he comes out in different colors.
Right. It's not, let's give him a... I don't want to head down this road. Yeah, I don't want to head down this road. If we head down this road, I'm going to start yelling at people again, and I don't want to start yelling at people again.
Yeah.
Just telling people to get
over
themselves.
Bit different road.
Next Malibu.
So what else you got, Cole? Get me off this track, please.
One of the Brave New Worlds that we did get, and I know I talk about this all too often, is out of the crisis, a lot of acquisitions like the Charlton characters and the Fawcett characters.
Right.
You had they got folded into the DC universe because of the Crisis on Infinite Earths, but then it was like, well, once they had them, what do you do with them? And so you got Shazam / Captain Marvel to go be in the Justice League. Started to get a lot more coverage of these characters. They actually started using them after the crisis because now they had a way to unify those universes. And, you know, now they all had to interact and you could just sort of pretend away the stupider aspects. And, you know, Blue Beetle got his own title. And a lot of that came after what started out as one thing and became another, which was Watchmen. because that was the going to be the definitive introduction of the Charlton universe into the DC universe until it was clear that most of them would be wiped out in the process.
Right.
And what's kind of neat is, though, if you read Watchmen as the Charlton characters, it falls apart. But if you look at what DC did with the Charlton characters when they realized, okay, this would have been great, but not. But let's do something with them. And let's just say, you know, screw it. Here's Blue Beetle. He's got his own comic book. Here's Captain Atom. He's got his own comic book. Let's just start doing things, and we'll change some of them up. You know, Captain Atom lost his little goofy Steve Ditko outfit and got completely gilded, or whatever the gilded word is when you coat something in silver. He got the silver plate action going on.
He got dipped.
Yeah, he got dipped. He got electroplated.
Right.
But did they work in E-Man?
E-Man was not from Charlton. E-Man was actually from First Comics and was creator-owned.
But E-Man was in... E-Man did appear in Charlton Comics.
Then shut up.
Shut up, Bobby. Throwing your dick around on my show.
He may have appeared in the comics, but he wasn't bought by DC. How's that?
Okay, that's fine. See, that's all. I just asked a question. You could just calm down trying to flaunt your, you know, your amazing knowledge.
Was Secret Wars supposed to be in continuity or out of continuity?
Secret Wars was intended to be in continuity because essentially the concept was that a big chunk of Earth was removed from Earth, and it just happened to have a good mix of heroes and villains on it at that moment.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were having intramurals or what, you know. Maybe they had like a superhero and villain picnic day or something. Because that was supposedly the world that it took place on. The Beyonder had like torn huge rents of chunks of different planets and melded them all together. And apparently one of the planets had a spider woman who dressed like the Spider-Man that was going to come out of this with the black costume.
Right.
How that works...
A blonde Spider Woman that came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, is the brain of Jim Shooter, and apparently
the
she was from
brain
Earth.
Of Jim Shooter.
Because apparently she was like from proper Earth,
from our Earth,
from our Earth. Yeah, and we all know how well that works,
right? Nobody from our Earth should ever actually have superpowers, because that's a bad idea. What about? So I got a question for Bobby.
Okay.
Along the same lines as that question, so you've got the old 52 and the new 52.
The old 52.
Broken, of course, by Flashpoint, right? Flashpoint was the catalyst that brought about the new 52. What do you think the chances of the old 52 still existing are?
I think they're... to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to do something, but I think DC's all in because... I think they probably had it in the back of their mind, if this doesn't work, here's what we're going to do.
Right.
But I think because it worked, and it's working fairly well for the most part, I think
they're not going to go back. No.
No, I think they've ditched it, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do like Elseworlds-type books
right.
and bring it back, but I don't foresee them really trying to fold any of that old stuff into the continuity to try to make... to utilize the old version of the characters. I think they wanted to move forward and leave that behind.
Okay.
Unlike Marvel, who like to do with the Age of Ultron stuff and kind of bounce around, you know, and keep that. They like, you know, Marvel's very excitable about using time travel for everything.
Oh, yeah.
So they keep all that. That's why we have the past, future, and present X-Men in the same book. Because they can't decide who they want to use, and they're like, you know what, let's create a new one. If it doesn't work, we've got the current one. If that doesn't work, we can always go back to the old school one because everyone loved them.
Yeah, we can just reboot it all the way back.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I give props for DC is, you know, they went all in, they took the chance. They can easily go back. They had that backup, but where Marvel, they still do their Marvel Now, and they do their Ultimate line. They keep, like, they're touching their toe in the water, but they never want to commit.
Right, I agree.
And get the pool.
I agree.
Oh. But see, that's the whole 52 Flashpoint thing is a great example of this sort of Brave New World, where you just sort of like, everything you know, oh, guess what? It's over.
Right.
And you saw a lot of that in the comics when they would do like the reboots, like the Man of Steel.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it was like, this comic needs an enema. and it got one.
Well, you look at no further than The Punisher for this. How many times has The Punisher book been rebooted? God, I can't even. They're about to reboot it again.
Like, yeah, but the new issue is actually really good.
Well, I imagine so. The last incarnation
it would have to be.
Here's the thing with The Punisher, though, is they've only really rebooted it once, which when they tried to make him that angel or the demon or whatever it was. Every other time, they just say, okay, sales are down, cancel it. Let's start it again, because he never starts over. It always picks up, including in the new issue that came out this week, number one, it starts right in the middle of him killing people. So it's like he's one of the only characters that's still working when there's no publication happening.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you never need to reboot him.
Exactly.
Because it's the same story. They've never changed the and even when they rebooted him as the Angel, they just changed his origin story. They just they went a little sideways on what he was doing and what he was capable of. But the origin of the Punisher, one of the only characters I can think of that they never ever screwed with the origin of the character.
If you want to get technical of the New 52 stuff, Batman was the only one that they really carried over some of the story arc stuff from the original storylines.
Yeah.
Of all the stuff they changed when they did the Son of the Bat and all the stuff that they had incorporated in with Damian and all this stuff, there's certain things in some of the issues in the early issues of New 52 that reference the old stuff. So they kept it.
Well, Batman Inc. and all that stuff, yeah.
They kept it in the continuity, but they just tweaked it. You know, they Miley Cyrus'd it and you know, made it so they didn't have to leave that stuff behind because they loved it. But it didn't matter because no one gave a crap as long as you could get their Batman again.
Exactly, and that's the thing about it. Like, people are going to bitch about any book that isn't Batman. Like, if you were to mess with Batman in such a way as to take away any of the continuity from the last year of the original, you know, let alone anything that happened prior to that, you know, if you weren't allowed to have nods to Batman in the Batman books that had come out, DC would have lost readership, period.
Oh, yeah.
You can do it with Superman. You can do it with Green Lantern. You can do it with Flash. You could certainly do it with Aquaman. And what they did, that is the, okay, so New 52, the real victory of New 52 wasn't the Justice League, wasn't Batman, wasn't Superman. It was straight up Aquaman. What they did for Aquaman was amazing. And thank God for it, because they made that character viable in ways that it had not been viable for a very long time.
Absolutely.
And it was the most deserving of the books to stick in the way that it did. You know, to get the creative team that it deserved finally, to make it viable, to build a readership that it never had. And that's awesome. So
it's funny is they the people they seem to kind of screw up somewhat, I guess it depends on your perspective, you know, and you take character like a Deathstroke, where he's always been a mercenary, you know, so he's always kind of looked at as a villain, even though it was whoever had the most money, and he had the code, but, you know, then he started popping up in stuff like the Teen Titans as Slade, as the villain in that show, and he's an Arrow now, and he's, you know, he's became this really popular character. But when the New 52 launched, he started off as like an assassin, but now he's a full-on villain again.
Right.
You know, and he still plays that card of saying, if you pay me, I'm going to be on your side. But you never see him get paid by, say, Batman.
Well,
you know, if they want to stop all the crap, you know, Bruce Wayne should be saying, hey,
that's
Deathstroke,
true. That would be a really awesome story.
Give you $5 million, you're now part of the Justice League.
That would be a really awesome. That would be an amazing five issues.
But the problem with that is that Lex Luthor comes in behind him and offers him another $10 million to kill the Justice League.
But see, Deathstroke was always one of those characters that had that honor that whoever paid
his word was his bond.
Exactly.
He never paid his contract.
That's brilliant.
That should mention it.
He was so hung up on contracts, he actually took on his dead son's contract.
Right.
Yep.
In what was the name of that story arc? I can't remember, but in Titans. But regardless,
first appearance, wasn't it?
That is an amazing idea.
That's what they should do in the Man of Steel versus Superman movie. The whole interaction between Lex and Bruce Wayne should be them in a contract negotiation of who is going to get Deathstroke.
And have I just want to see the next story arc in Justice League. I want to see Bruce Wayne.
They need to have him in the conference room arguing, and they've got their lawyers fighting, and you've got Deathstroke sitting at the end of the table with his feet up on the table, with his phone texting, you know, or on Facebook or something, just looking at him like they're dumbasses.
Right.
While he's trying to get the contract. Only to find out at the very end that somebody else with even more money paid him and he kills everybody.
Or he steps out during the fight. You know, he's paid to take the dive. So
that's where, like, while they're having that conversation, like, say Bruce Wayne suddenly transfers the money while he's sitting there at the end of the room, and then he just leans over and shoots Lex Luthor in the face.
Oh man, that would be an awesome like three panels of a short comic.
What you've got there is the whole time the negotiations are going on, and they think they're finalizing. Okay, we've got it. This is the way it's going to be, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh. Sorry, you've both been outbid. And somebody like Darkseid, who just like will gold into existence. Somebody like that is like so. Darkseid, I think, would be a type of character who would be more interested in the status quo. It would be worth his while.
I think he would be. I would write it to where like Mr. Banjo had finally scored this big gig in Vegas.
Mr. Banjo in anything.
Because here's what would happen. He would take his entire check from his big Vegas gig. It was his final tour. He pays Deathstroke, and he forces Deathstroke to wear the little Mr. Banjo outfit as part of the gig.
No, here's what happens. Here's what happens, okay? It's the Injustice Gang and Justice League, right?
There you go.
And it comes down to Deathstroke, and it's Luthor and it's Wayne sitting at a conference table. And Deathstroke, like you said, is sitting at the end of the conference table texting on his phone, right? No mask, eye patch, long white ponytail, boots up on the thing, sword strapped to his back, on his phone texting. All of a sudden, the negotiations, he's checking his phone. Deathstroke stops the negotiations, says, I'm taking Wayne's deal. Right, just gets up without saying another word, walks out. There's a huge throwdown about three issues later in some warehouse or somewhere, right? And it's all of these guys, it's the entire Justice League, and it's the entire Injustice Gang fighting. Deathstroke all of a sudden disappears. You see him talking to Luthor, saying that. That he's willing to accept his deal. He sides with them, starts fighting with the Justice League, all of a sudden pulls out a gun, puts it to Ocean Master's head, pulls the trigger. Ocean Master's dead. Everybody just stops. Everybody's like, what the shit just happened? He walks up to Aquaman, and Aquaman whistles, and out of the ocean comes one of those giant footed whales just carrying giant casks of Atlantean gold, gives it to him, and he leaves. And he said, I told you I should have been the leader of the goddamn Justice League. That's how it should end, right there.
And then he drowns Deathstroke.
And then Deathstroke becomes his personal mercenary.
Serious take of that story, I think what will be really cool, though, as a subplot is to finance their bid, the Injustice League are committing crimes to gain more money and therefore more leverage in these negotiations. And, of course, the Justice League are having to fight the Injustice Gang to prevent them from successfully executing this plan.
Right.
And so, you know, you've got the whole time negotiations are going on, there's still action and interaction between the two groups. And I think there you really could tell a really compelling story where – you know, every time they get an upper hand in the negotiations, the damn Justice League comes along and kicks their ass, and they lose some of their money. And it's like, oh, all of a sudden, you're not, you know, you don't have as much to offer me.
The great part, okay, so Cole, let me one up this story since we're going down this road, since we're writing this story arc right now. The whole story arc takes place over an 8-hour period of negotiation. Okay, you got Wayne, and you've got Luthor, and then you got Deathstroke,
and Mr. Banjo.
Well, behind the scenes during this negotiation, you start to get the idea that all Bruce Wayne is doing is stalling. Because during this 8 hours, the entire Justice League is out destroying all of Luthor's operations. Just draining his bank account dry. Like, he's got Oracle and the Bat family out there, you know, hacking his accounts and pulling them down. And any criminal empire he has, Green Arrow
literally everything is getting undermined.
Right. Aquaman is flooding his dockside storage units to drive his stock down. Just all of these things are happening at once. And the whole time Luthor's assistant is standing behind him, just watching on a tablet, just watching his bank account go down in steps every hour. And he's like, he keeps trying to get Luthor's attention. He's like, Lex, Mr. Luthor, we should, he's like, no, I've got this. Just let me work, you know? And the whole time he's just draining, and Wayne's got that smirk on his face the whole time.
Daddy's talking.
Right. And then finally he's like, all right, I offer, $3 billion. Like, Mr. Luthor, we don't have $3 billion anymore. $2 billion. No. No. What? 500? No. No.
Fuck and a quarter.
What's happened? And then Wayne just smiles and gets up and leaves. And then all of a sudden you start seeing the backstory of all the things that happened during the negotiations. They did something similar to that. Go ahead, Bobby.
Well,
I'm sorry.
But what's got to happen is Wayne gets up to leave.
Mr. Banjo.
No. This is not a Mr. Banjo. Wayne gets up, although it should be. He's playing the theme song for my story. Wayne gets up to leave. To smirk, he does his smirk. He's getting to leave. He's like, he's won, only to go outside to make the call to transfer the money to Deathstroke. But you find out that Frenchie this whole time has been taking all the money from Bruce Wayne, and Deathstroke has everybody's money now.
Right. Luther's team had the same idea and was doing the same thing on the other side.
It's like a cycle of money just thing. And meanwhile, Oliver Queen is sitting up in his penthouse collecting everybody's cash.
Right.
Some other corporation. He's like, fuck Deathstroke.
He's like, what do you think about my Arrow Cave now, bitch?
That's right.
That's a great idea.
Copyright pending.
One of the things that does occur to me about this, the whole storyline here, this particular arc, is one of the things that came out of the crisis and the melding of these various universes that, that DC had bought and folded into their universe, that allows Bobby to utilize
Mr. Banjo.
Right.
Yes.
In the DCU. So,
right.
Oh, for that, I have to thank them. At least Bobby does.
It's allowed for so many, not only stories like we just told, the negotiation to hire Deathstroke because of his now, his reputation after Identity Crisis or whatever. It allows us to tell that story. But it also allows professional comic book creators to tell that story that they've always wanted to tell and have never been allowed. Like, they can go pitch it, like they could go into the editor's office and say, God, we got this idea for this story. We don't want to put it in regular continuity, but we want to make Luthor and Bruce Wayne broke. And here's how we do it.
And let me just say that we did not just tell this story. If you're listening to this, you just experienced
you
it.
You did experience
That's
a story.
True.
You did experience a story. I do like the
We're
fact
that a live Broadway version of this thing as of later with Cole portraying Mr. Banjo.
Naturally.
Well, I mean, Cole always portrays Mr. Banjo.
Right.
So Bobby, you've been here with us for 5 issues of this story arc now. Do you have any final thoughts on the 5 hours we've spent talking about this?
I think the best thing that has come out of this, besides the spreading the unnatural world of Mr. Banjo to the masses,
right,
is the thought of the existence of Bouncing Girl. With the Bouncing Squirrel and the Dazzling Banjo as a team up. I think that the world of comics is a better place because of it.
Nice.
I think we probably are going to get ripped off. I think in the coming months, the storyline is going to show up in DC.
Oh, I'm sure.
This Deathstroke thing, and there's going to be a bunch of litigations where this show is shut down. And I think it's going to be a massive undertaking, and I think it is going to be brilliant. And out of the ashes, our money will be put towards the Cardigan and Flutesman film.
Right, which has
been
an option.
And we'll take over this, and nobody will care about Jesse Eisenberg anymore.
Which, by the way, how long until it gets optioned, Bobby?
I'm sorry, you don't.
I don't get optioned?
I don't even know your name anymore.
Oh, my God.
I knew it.
I will pay you for the use of your cardigans.
You're gonna make me a glorified costumer in my own movie.
Because when you show up to Alcon, and you are showing up, I don't care what you say, no matter how you dress, you're going to already be cardigan.
Well, it's going to be too warm for cardigans.
It's never too warm for cardigans.
That's my tagline in the comic.
I love it.
It's never too warm for cardigans. Hey, cardigan, isn't it a little warm to be wearing? It's never too warm.
It's just
and
like,
I just shoot him in the face.
I'm going to have like, he has to have the smallest flute you can think because he's going to be so massively big.
Right.
Then when he plays it, it's like, it's this borderline like Power Ranger when he plays his sword to call his sword.
Right.
It's so ridiculous, but he's so massively used it looks like he's playing like a twig and becomes really bizarre looking.
So, Cole, what about you? You brought this idea into the world.
I know, and I'm amazed and impressed and stunned and horrified all at once because, you know, it's an amazing aspect of comics that I think it's easy to let it go unnoticed because it happens so often.
Yeah.
And that it almost gets downplayed by its frequency. But the reality is, you know, so it's the best and worst that comics have ever had to offer.
It's true. And sometimes at exactly the same time.
Yeah, precisely.
Sometimes it's they're so good, they're bad. And sometimes they're so bad, but those are the ones we remember. I mean, sitting there thinking about it, I don't remember half of the really good ones, but I remember all the horrible ones.
I remember JLA Avengers like the back of my hand. I remember Amalgam like it came out yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Well, JLA Avengers is a personal bone of contention for me because Marvel was announcing a release date at the same time that historically only 8 pages had ever been drawn and the project was dead in the water.
Right.
But they weren't going to admit that it was over.
Yeah, never.
And, you know, I know that we bugged the hell out of Port Jerry, the owner of Duncanville Bookstore back then, and I'm sure that there were pairs and groups and individuals, just like Steve and I, constantly going in and browbeating our poor beleaguered comic shop owners back in the day when there was not a flow of information. And it wasn't until Comics Interview said, hey, guess what? It's not going to happen.
Right.
It's like every week going in and saying, can you tell me when Pit Number 2 is coming out?
Oh,
wow.
Damn. Or that's a raw nerve.
Camelot 3000 number 12.
that was a harsh reality that you just dropped on us, Bobby.
I was pissed. I love that book. I love Del Kion, and I was so mad. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It serves us well to be reminded of these things.
That's right. In fact, speaking of your beloved Pitt, there was a cover of Wizard magazine that had Pitt and the Max on it.
I remember that.
I still have that book.
And I think because nobody really read Wizard, they just, you know, bought it and looked for the fart jokes. But I remember back in the days when Catherine and I were working at Diamond, one of the owners of one of the comic shops in the Fort Worth area came in, and said, you know, he's got this kid. He's just, like, bugging him incessantly about Pit the Max. When's Pit the Max coming out? I want to get Pit the Max. And I knew exactly what was going on, and I opted not to try to explain it. Because then I would have to go and track down this stupid issue of Wizard to show him, this is why this kid thinks there is no Pit the Max. There will never be a Pit the Max. Now that I say that, you know, someone's going to come out with Pit the Max.
Right.
But, you know,
they're republishing Max right now, so who knows? You never know.
Of course you are.
The thing that is, you know, all I could think of was this time when I was in a record store, because I'm old enough to have gone and looked for 45s in a record store.
You know, a record store with a 45.
Oh, jeez.
And I remember hearing this kid asking the clerk for, he was looking for the Thunder Cheek song.
The Thunder Cheek song?
Yeah, the Thunder Cheek song. And I knew, and this was another case where I should have gone and bailed the poor guy out, because I knew what the kid was looking for.
But you care to enlighten us?
Looking for Dirty Deeds.
Oh.
You know, Dirty Deeds and the Thunder Cheek.
Oh, jeez, Dirty Deeds and the Thunder Cheek.
I'm still waiting for the Darker Image number 2 to come out.
Oh, no, you're not. with Lobo, with Image's Lobo.
No, his name was Blood Wolf.
It was not Blood Wolf. It was Lobo. It was Sad Lobo is what his name
was. Blood Wolf.
It was Sad Lobo. I don't care what you say. His name will always be Sad Lobo to me.
He was Blood Wolf, and I even believe he teamed up with the Fighting American at one point.
I'm not shocked about that, actually.
Speaking of Sad Lobos.
Lobo the Duck?
That did remind me of one thing I wanted to bring up on this, because it wasn't so much alternate universes, but the thing where the regular continuity all of a sudden just goes, mwah! And right. Somebody thinks better of a character. And if you look back at Lobo's first appearance, hardcore Lobo fans were probably shocked. They're like, all right, Omega Man, this is where Lobo first appears. Who's this Joker-looking guy on the cover? Where's Lobo? Oh, that's Lobo?
Right.
Because Lobo, in his first appearance, looked nothing like Lobo as he would become. Ambush Bug, in his first appearance, was actually an assassin who killed a guy, a senator or something, practically right under Superman's nose. And then the very next time you ever saw Ambush Bug again, he was a comic farce.
Right.
And remained such until his death in 2003.
Ambush Bug should have never appeared in any comic.
Oh, you watch your mouth waiting on the
I just wanted to wait and see how many people listening are like, Ambush Bug died? My knowledge, there was never a published edition of Ambush Bug's death.
I remember the funeral.
And another one over at Marvel. They were just as guilty when, was it Betty Brannigan or Betty, the Psylocke?
Betty Braddock.
Braddock,
oh
yeah,
man,
Braddock,
this one, holy shit. Yes, keep going.
She's got her like Victorian big hair going on, and it's all purple, and she's got her little costume that looks like something between Ice Capades and Victoria's Secret.
No, yeah. But here's the thing about
it. All of a sudden, Miss Prim proper Mary Poppins with the purple punk hair going on turns into a Japanese ninja woman.
Yeah, well, she was British. Yeah. She went from being British to being Asian. Like, what happened?
That's what's messed up about that. It wasn't so much they changed her nationality, is they didn't change the person. They just, it's the same person.
The only other thing I can think of that went from being British to being Asian was Hong Kong.
Nice. Maybe it was social commentary.
I may well have been.
Oh, I think we just discovered something. I think that the Psylocke character was social commentary. Oh, God, that's brilliant.
So since you brought up you didn't bring up Lobo, but since you were talking about the first appearance of Lobo, was it not until like the Simon Beisley stuff that he really started becoming what he is now? Well, not the new 52 gay one, but the one before.
Jeez.
I think when somebody decided they wanted a character that was what Lobo would ultimately become, somebody said, well, we got this throwaway character. You can do whatever you want with it. I think the same was true for Ambush Bug. And the same, probably not so much the same with Psylocke. Psylocke was more like, you know what's hot right now? Hot ninja Asian women.
Right.
Do we have any of those? No, but we've got Psylocke. Why was this a thing? How does this happen?
All right, boys, rein it in. We got to do plugs.
All right.
Do whatever we want. Don't tell us what to do.
I get to on this one. I don't get to very often, but on this one I do.
in much the same way that on Arrow, Detective Lance is king of cops.
Right.
On this show, Andrew is king.
In the world of... I don't know. I'm not going to make the joke.
This is the one corner of the JCU where Andrew holds sway, where he is the sovereign ruler.
Bobby, it's all I got.
He gets to be you're the lead writer of Generation Hex.
Oh, that's rough. Which, you just equated this show to Generation Hex. I don't know how I feel about that, you ass.
Guess who's never going to get invited back? And
that's
be
why
happy.
You said it. So,
that's all I had to do.
Thank you, Bobby, for all of our shit giving, for coming out and doing 5 back-to-back issues with us. We appreciate it, man.
It's my pleasure, as always.
That is pretty impressive. That's a Hey Kids Comics record.
It is. It is. Thank you.
It's just to add to many other records that I already have.
It wouldn't have been the same arc without you. So I appreciate you being here and fighting through with this. Cole, why don't you tell us what's going on JCU this week, month?
Wow, this is going to be a big month for the JCU because we're going to start probably in about 2 or 3 days. Rather fitting that in this arc is that it will be a cross-site coverage of AllCon.
Nice.
Because their slogan is your favorite con, and it certainly is in my case, and I know it is in Andrew's.
It absolutely is, yeah.
Bobby is indifferent to everything in the world, so it doesn't matter.
It's just Bobby.
But I do actually love AllCon.
Oh,
but
yeah, he does love AllCon. That's a strong sentence from Bobby there.
Yeah, that really is.
Any sentence is a strong sentence.
That's true.
You will find coverage of AllCon, pre-show coverage of AllCon, here on the Jedi Cole Universe, also over at the Convention Awareness Project Texas at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com, here at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, and over at the United States of Geekdom at UnitedStatesofGeekdom.com.
Man,
this is going to be 3-pronged coverage because you can't contain it. And there'll be a 4th place where you can go find coverage, which is a soon to be announced committed website for the game show track of AllCon.
Wow, that is huge.
It's a huge show. And, of course, in an upcoming issue of this very show,
upcoming,
you will actually, I think, the week, the Wednesday before AllCon?
I believe so, yes.
You will have all things AllCon on this very show.
Yes, we will.
And, of course, every Sunday on the JCU, yeah, you can find more of Bobby's amazing artwork, even though he would tell you otherwise, with JCU Sunday Funnies. Got a lot of new stuff coming up. There's a brand new show coming up very soon for the JCU Podcasting Network. Lots of neat stuff coming down. Convention Awareness Project, of course, Andrew and I can be found over at the United States of Geekdom, along with Mrs. Jedi Cole and the mountable Rick Gutierrez.
Right. Bobby, got plugs?
No, it's all my real hair.
Okay. Yeah, you and me both. We can keep telling ourselves whatever gets us through the night, right?
As Cole mentioned, you can check out my weekly funnies over there at the Jedi Cole Universe, along with Eddie Medina and anybody else that contributes at any given time. But they really should just check out mine, because mine are the worst but the most awesome.
He needs all the help he can get.
Exactly. I need someone to know me. And you can check out my reviews for TV, movies, martial arts, comics at examiner.com. And if I ever get back to it, you can still go read 6 years of my web strip at laststopcomic.com. And we're working on some surprise stuff for AllCon between me and Mr. Cole. And
absolutely. And you can also find Bobby now on his new weekly show, MrBanjo.com.
That's right. As well as What You Think, whenever we get around to thinking about anything with Mrs. Jedi Cole.
There will actually be a new What You Think next Wednesday.
And don't forget, the Lego movie's coming out this week. Cole's extremely excited about it. So ask him what he thinks, because he will have an opinion.
So with that being said, next week we're going to be joined by the mountable Rick Gutierrez, where we have decided to take a break. We're all a little burnt out from doing anything cerebral and thinking about anything, really. So we're going to bring it back to our roots and have a Tales from the Toy Aisle. Toy Fair's coming up. AllCon's coming up. We're going to talk about toys for an hour and just relax. Bobby, we're giving the night off. Bobby does not have to be here for it. I want to say we apologize for being a day late. We had some timing issues. Like I said, things have been really hectic in the preparation for AllCon. We all got stuff going on.
Let's just I'd like to interrupt, and I'd like to just say the real reason we were late is I was drunk.
No, it's not the real reason.
It was not solely because we're drunk.
they didn't want to record because I'm drunk, which there were things said.
We recorded with Andrew drunk. What are you talking about?
But there's a difference between when I'm drunk and Andrew drunk.
Not really.
There's some things that were said that probably shouldn't be public knowledge. So
I personally have very little time right now. I've got a lot of stuff going on. Cole's the lead of the game show track for AllCon, so he's got all kinds of stuff going on. Bobby's got all of his reviews, not to mention classes. We just ran out of time. We misjudged. We're sorry. We hope that this makes up for it. As an added bonus to you guys, I am going to take the intro that we did for this show, our warm-up, where we discuss Batman Superman ad nauseum, and plug it into the end of this particular issue, and we're going to throw that up with this as a little Easter egg for you guys, for sticking around to the hour mark on this one. So that's going to be there for you next week.
That's your bonus there. And right. I do want to point out, though, that even with everything else, all the stumbling blocks in front of us, Andrew is still able to somehow, and I can't fathom. I put out a bi-weekly show, and I still miss the mark. And we're putting out this staggering weekly show, and it still happens every week. And it's like the number one thing on the network.
Well, it's a labor of love for all of us at this point. You could say I put it out, but here you are, and Bobby's been here for 5 weeks. That's a month and a half of this show that Bobby's been forced onto. I love doing it. I'm not going to stop. I always said that this is something that's going to be a priority for me. And I love doing it. And I love hearing back from people like Josh, who, by the way, Bobby, I'm not going to let you discuss this on the show right now, but Josh Alpert did send me a correction. You keep calling him Mr. Banjo. He's actually Mr. Ukulele.
No.
You don't get to address it. You don't get to address it right now. You can be as angry as you want. We're out of time.
His name is Mr. Banjo.
We're out of time. We've got to go.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. I love y'all. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. Bye. Did we fuck this movie when Heath Ledger was announced as the Joker? Did we fuck this movie when Cillian Murphy was announced as Scarecrow? Did we, you know, like, guys, come on. Stop.
The Bane mask is horrible. Fuck this movie.
I didn't like the casting of Eisenberg for Lex Luthor. I really didn't. But I'm actually down with the idea, supposedly. It's not even finalized. It's official. It's all rumor right now still. But I'm really down with them going with more of a grittier Lex. I'm tired of fucking Lex Luthor anyway.
Well, I think young sociopath Lex Luthor played by Eisenberg could be really good.
If he plays The Social Network in that movie with a little more menacing, insane tone.
Right, exactly. Really?
That one sequence in Social Network when he's talking about being the smartest person in the room is fucking awesome.
Well, the thing about it is a younger Lex not only is more approachable, so that's part of it, but I think one of the things that'll bring perspective on the best explanation I ever heard of what Lex Luthor ought to be came from Steve, who said that at his best, Lex Luthor sees Superman not as a threat to himself, but as a threat to humanity.
Right.
Right.
And frankly, the Superman we got in Man of Steel fits that bill beautifully.
Yep.
And especially if
you have a younger Lex Luthor who's going to say, look, I'm not, you know, I haven't been around forever. I'm not some old geezer who's trying to be like, oh, you know, back in my day, the superheroes didn't go and crack your neck.
Right.
That, you know, if you get this younger one who says, you know, I'm forward thinking enough that at, you know, 31, I've got this multi-trillion-dollar international empire. And I can see the potential danger of flocking to this guy.
Right. Right, exactly.
And to me, I think that's very workable.
I think it's going to be brilliant. And I'm so more excited. I've never been more excited for a casting, for a superhero movie casting, than I am for Kenneth Irons.
Jeremy Irons.
Whichever Irons it is playing.
Kenneth
Alfred,
Irons is his brother.
As like a. I get him confused with what's the other Kenneth Branagh sometimes.
Hey, I went to school with Kenneth Irons.
As the sort of bodyguard to the Waynes that failed them, you know, so he's a badass, carries a gun, that type of guy that was like, I forget which incarnation of Batman that Alfred is from, but I really like that idea that a lot of his guilt comes from letting the Waynes die.
Yeah.
And that is cool. That is a friggin' great idea. Like, that is some awesome casting. I think Eisenberg's going to be fine. I think that Damon's going to do a really good job. I'm way more concerned about whoever's playing Batman. Who did I say? Damon? They're the same person. If you're white, you're Ben Affleck. I'm way more concerned about Superman than I am any of those guys. I'm way more concerned about the guy, the portrayal of Superman than I am any of those.
Now, I think he did a great job.
The tattooed skinhead approach, I'm a little against.
I've heard. I think.
I just don't see, you know, a captain of industry being taken seriously on the level Lex Luthor needs to be taken seriously as some punk ass little shit.
I think it's misinterpreting what they're saying. I think the title to that making the tattooed skinhead is, I don't foresee them tattooing him up to the point to where he's like, you know, some thuggish skinhead. Right. I think the mentality is, you know, he's going to have tattoos and he's going to be this, you know, more modern kind of, you know, rough kid in the streets who had to fight his way up to get his wealth, you know, and whether they use the cyber shit or whatever the case is, he's just like some kind of genius that I think to me adds more realism to the character than the normal shit we get. Which also fits his attitude.
I think what we're going to see is the kid from the streets who was a criminal at a street level when he was young, has tattoos, you know, kind of rough around the edges, might have a more trendy haircut, you know, might dress a little trendier, young, maybe late 20s type of guy, you know, mid to late 20s, come up from the street, build his empire, probably builds it off of illegal activity, but then launders it out, makes it all legal, owns LexCorp at this point, you know, some super cyber company where he owns something like Facebook or where he owns something like Twitter, and he's got his finger in every pie out there, and decides to take all of his, and probably has some defense industry contracts at this point, bio industry contracts, and decides to take all of his indomitable wealth and throw it against Superman. And he's also a sociopath genius, you know.
Yeah.
And that is going to be, if they pull that off, that's perfect for him.
Well, see, I think there's two things. There's a couple things, actually. One, how many times have you ever seen Lex out of a suit that's not in, like, his armored suit?
Right.
So first of all, we don't know if he's tattooed up. So people need to get over thinking, well, he's not supposed to be tattooed up. You've seen his hands and his bald head.
Take him out of that. Take him out of the suit.
That's all you've seen. But what I'm saying is, in the movie, if they put him in the suit for 90% of the movie, you know, whether you see him early on and then he's in the suit, that suit changes the entire persona of the guy.
Right.
You know, but then if he harkens back to those old days, like say at the end of the film when the climax is happening, you know, and he suddenly rips his suit off to put on his armor or just go as is, and now he's back to being that. It's, you know, it's one of those mentalities, like those tattoos remind him who he is, but the suit tells everybody else who he is.
Right.
I guess, really, I think one of the problems I have is you can go too far. There's this, it seems like, okay, we're finally going to get movies about these characters that have been ignored all this time. But would people have flocked to Iron Man if they said, okay, you know, Tony Stark is the billionaire industrialist who has a drinking problem potentially, and you know that's not going to wash with modern audiences. We need to make him like 19 years old and a, you know.
But Superman's only.
Here's the thing, though, is I think that's a misconception, because I think the reason people flocked to Iron Man had nothing to do with Iron Man, had nothing to do with modern nerds. It had to do with.
I guess my problem is there seems to be there's two approaches, either. You know, trying to be 100% true to the source material is never going to happen. You know, that's not going to make good cinema. But there seems to be this rush to rewrite every last aspect of the character to the point where they cease. You know, at that point, it's that first Punisher movie where the director himself said, oh, he's not going to have a costume. That's too much like a comic.
But that's not what they're doing. I mean, I don't think that's what they're doing. They're giving
I think they're taking aspects of the character that's always been there, and they're just on showing it on screen instead of giving us the stereotypical, here's bald legs.
I appreciate what you guys are saying, but what I'm getting at
is, let me tell you.
Shut up. But one of the big problems is, I think that, you know, in trying to retool and modernize these characters, very often filmmakers just feel like they have to change absolutely everything, you know, instead of just like making some subtle tweaks or modernizing a few aspects, they feel like they've got to just go all in and change absolutely everything. And I think that's why, where you get people up in arms.
No, you get people up in arms because people want to be up in arms.
Well, there's that.
See, Lex Luthor is such a, in my personal opinion, is such a boring, stupid character anyway. If in reality, you know, now he's more interesting these days because the way they're writing him. But as a normal character, I've never understood the appeal to him because he's just a dude. And not that he needed powers or anything, but to me there was never anything appealing about it. He was just a greedy businessman. It wasn't until much later that we started getting his view of, you know, his fear of this, you know, him protecting his planet from this god, you know, which started making him more appealing again. But
so here's what they're going to do. All right. You're going to get young Lex Luthor on the streets as a thug, as a criminal who takes over whatever criminal empire he works for and starts building his way up. He's got tattoos. He's probably got sleeves that you never see because he's wearing the, wearing the suit, but he's probably got tattoos from wrist all the way up and then down his body. Probably not on his head. He becomes the businessman. He wears the suits. He's got his assistants. He's in a high-rise office building somewhere for LexCorp. He spends 2 hours or an hour and a half of the 2.5 hours in that persona. But he's also, because of his background and because of his wealth and because of where he comes from, he's also trained himself to be this badass fighter, right? He keeps in shape. He keeps fighting. He's started as a fighter. He's kept on fighting. There's going to be a scene, because you have Batman and Superman, there's going to be a scene where he fights Batman. There's going to be a scene where Batman is in his office, comes through the window or is in the shadows and steps out, and Luther's like, you know, I always knew it would come to this. And Luther slowly, Jason Statham-like, takes off his suit, takes off his shirt, and he's got like a wife beater on, but all his tattoos are there, you know, and Jesse Eisenberg works out between now and filming, so he's kind of big, you know, and then there's this rough and tumble fight scene between Batman and Luther. You know, ultimately, Batman wins the stalemate. Batman leaves. Luther goes and gets in his Kryptonian armor that he salvages from what happens with Zod and Zod's people that he built to fight Superman, and then he has to fight Superman. But you're going to have that tie-in to the beginning with the tattoos and shit when he takes his shirt off and he's totally badass and he's got his he gets
and the thing is
level
that's
again.
That's the ideal.
What's funny is everybody talking about he's Jesse Eisenberg's too young to this. Him and Henry Cavill are the exact same age.
Right.
They're both the same age. So it's like they're making it sound like they just cast, you know.
Ben Affleck is the old man in this thing.
And that's why they're trying to do that. But they're making it sound like, you know, they cast like a little kid to play Lex Luthor alongside this aged Superman. They're exact same fucking age.
No, they're the young ones. Batman is supposed to be the older guy in this.
Well,
he's the grizzled guy, you know? He's the one that, and I can see, and we don't know it yet, but I could see a good kind of Batman villain showing up, whether it be a Ra's al Ghul or whether it be a, you know, somebody like that, somebody who isn't.
Well, what I would like to see is that Luthor and Batman probably initially are going to be seeing eye to eye about Superman.
That's probably true.
And I would like to see that sort of dynamic explored where ultimately Batman has to come to realize that Luthor's the bad egg.
Well, Batman finds Luthor's Kryptonian suit of armor that he made to fight Superman, you know, and then they have the conversation about, you know, the ultimate solution. We kill Superman. And Batman's like, whoa, I'm not about killing some motherfuckers right now. I just want to, you know, let's talk to him. Let's see where he stands. Let's give him a chance. Let's have a contingency plan in place. And Luthor's like, I am the contingency plan. It's time to bring him down. And then they fight. And then the fucking suit comes on. And then Batman. And then he beats Superman because Superman's kind of a pussy in these movies. And then and then Batman and Superman have to team up to fight Luthor, who in turn finds a mother box somewhere along the line and summons Darkseid, and then we have the Justice League movie in the works where they have to gotta form a team and we're gonna get Morgan Freeman and Kevin Kline as Flash. And
this shit I'm hated about is all this fucking Justice League shit thrown into it.
I still like Kevin Kline as Flash.
My concern with the Justice League that they keep dropping names that they're going to, that, you know, they cast this character and that character, is that it's going to be such an attempt to force feed Justice League to get as many characters in that it's going to turn into that damn Grayson trailer that everybody was so gaga about a few years ago.
Right. Yeah, well, you know what's going to happen is like, I think they've made some good casting choices for the Justice League people, but they're going to disappoint everybody, because what they're going to do is they're going to shove them all in at the end of the movie and say, here's the Justice League, and everybody's going to be like, are you shitting me? That's it?
Oh, yeah. Totally what's going to happen. There's going to be a threat. Like, you're going to see a boom tube open again, and then a pair of demons or something, and then, like, well, we've got a... secretly, we've had a watchtower forever, and we know where all these superheroes, you know, like, Batman's going to be like Brother Eye, like, oh, I've had this all along, like...
Let me just dial up a few of my friends.
Newhart wakes up in bed with Batman.
Now, you know what? As irritating as that is to me, that would probably be the only way that it would work, is that the whole premise of this movie is they've been formed and Batman's basically trying to get Superman to investigate him and trying to get him to join the Justice League.
Well, he's basically, the whole movie is a vetting process.
Yeah, he's like, at the end of it, he goes, you know what? You ain't so bad. Let me introduce you to a couple of my friends. You know, and right. They show up, and then it sets
and
up.
And then, like, no sooner does he hit the last button, the Flash is there.
That's right.
Right. And then boom tubes start opening all over the earth, and you see them from the watchtower windows, like, goo, goo, goo. And then the alerts start going off, and Hawkman goes, well, get back on monitor duty, you son of a bitch. Nobody told you to leave the room. Like,
I don't remember asking you to show up for this.
That's right.
Fucking Hawkman.
All right, do you want to record a show now that we're warmed up?
Yeah, not only am I warmed up, I'm worked up, man.
All right, hold on. I'm going to call you both back, and we're going to do a show.
Okay, I'm going to make up because I said I don't know what we're doing.
All right, yes, you do.